He hails from Tallahassee. But after a local political district has been redrawn, former state Senator Al Lawson is setting his sights on Corrine Brown's seat in Congress. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show video on demand with our partner, TVJax.com. Just ahead, we'll take your calls. As Corrine Brown's challenger, Al Lawson, steps into Studio 5, you can get on the line now at 549-2937 with your questions for him. Then later, it's author and wellness coach Cindy Landham on her book, The Liberated Eater, plus The Spectator with some ideas for your weekend. And we'll tell you about our Instagram contest, I Love WJCT, all of that ahead. But first this hour, Corrine Brown's recent indictment on 24 charges of fraud may provide a political opening for her biggest challenger, former state Senator Al Lawson of Tallahassee. Lawson, the most high-profile contender to replace Brown in the District 5 congressional seat she's held for more than two decades. Senator Lawson joins us now in studio with more about his campaign and the state of the race. Senator Lawson, a pleasure, and thanks for being on the program.
It's a real privilege to be here with you this morning.
And to our callers, what are your questions and comments for former State Senator Al Lawson of Tallahassee? Now that the District 5 congressional seat here in North Florida has been redrawn and runs from east to west, from Jacksonville towards Tallahassee, Lawson is throwing his hat in the ring and challenging Corrine Brown for her District 5 seat. We want your calls. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet us, or you can comment on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. You're well-known in Tallahassee, former basketball star, a well-known face and name around the Capitol, but you're just beginning to introduce yourself to folks here in Jacksonville. State Senator Al Lawson, tell us a little bit about your campaign.
Well, I have a very active campaign, and I'm real happy now to have campaign staff here in Jacksonville. We have a campaign office open a couple of weeks ago in Tallahassee, and we are doing all the things you do in a campaign. You know, we are calling constituents. We're sending out mailings, especially to absentee voters and especially to veterans, so that we touch base with all of them. The campaign is, we got a great staff. You know, I have a number of volunteers with students from Florida A&M University, FSU, and TCC. And so, you know, we like to have about 100 volunteers so that we can reach all corners of the district. The district is rural in some areas, and then it becomes urban in Tallahassee and in Jacksonville. So it's a great opportunity to provide the kind of leadership that this district needs in Washington and in the state of Florida. I think that I'm qualified to bring this type of leadership to this particular area. And I'm very familiar with the Jacksonville area. I have a brother that live here, and good friend and artist Gilmo, who we played basketball against during the years. And my former head coach, Hugh Durham, lives here, who coached at JU and also coached at University of Georgia and at Florida State University.
Now you, of course, former basketball star like your friend Artis Gilmore. By the way, he's only a few inches taller than you. You are a tall guy. In fact, the FAMU basketball arena, I didn't know this, is named after you. You served in the Florida House and the State Senate. And let me ask you, because, of course, Corrine Brown is facing the political fight of her life. She's facing federal indictments over a charity associated with her staff. This race, according to a University of North Florida poll, this was, by the way, this was pulled before the indictment came down against Representative Brown, highly competitive, with Corrine Brown holding a three-point lead over you, Al Lawson, but 40% still undecided. LaShonda Holloway is the third Democrat in the race, and she's polling at 4%. How can you win over this huge chunk of undecided voters in the newly redrawn District 5, given that despite her challenges and her controversies, Corrine Brown has a loyal voter base in Jacksonville, and there are more voters in Duval than there are in the rest of the district?
I think the district deserves a different type of leadership, you know, where people can feel more inclusive, that I've been able to do during my career. I represent about 12 North Florida counties, from Panama City all the way through Madison. Four of those counties I represented for a number of years. I think that one of the ways that you are able to get 40%, 60%, 70% of those voters who are undecided, you have to go to them. And that's where we plan to take the campaign. Mm-hmm. We take the campaign directly to them so that we can let them know what we have been involved in, what we've done in the future, the type of leadership that I've had in the state of Florida. And the leadership that I had in the state of Florida also involved Duval, because many of the committees that I chaired in the legislature under Republican administration, we had some great leaders that came from Duval, and I had the opportunity to work with them. So even though you represent an area of 11 or 12 counties in North Florida, because of my leadership abilities and being the Democratic leader of the Senate, also the dean of the Florida legislature, I chaired all the water committees and natural resource committees in the state, both in the House and the Senate. And I knew that the St. John River was very important to this particular area. So I teamed with, at the time, Senator Kaine on all the legislation that he sponsored here, and some of the other local representatives, Senator Hill and many of the other ones, on issues that affected this particular area. So the only way that you can be successful, you know, in a campaign, you have to go to those voters, and I feel confident that I'm the person that can go to them. No one else has really reached out to them, but we've been reaching out to them. We're going to continue over the next 30-some days to reach them.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking right now with former State Senator Al Lawson, a well-known figure in Tallahassee, as he challenges Representative Kareem Brown for her District 5 seat in Congress. What are your questions? We'll go to the phones in a moment at 549-2937. Al Lawson, of course, for years, Kareem Brown's slogan has been Kareem Delivers. What would you say to those who are dismayed by her ethical challenges that she's fighting in court, but they feel that she has the relationships and the juice on Capitol Hill to deliver for this district in a way that a newcomer might not?
Well, I don't know exactly, and I've been trying to find out what that term means, because I would like to know what has she delivered. I mean, I see when I'm in Jacksonville area, in the African-American community, you have some areas in housing look like third world countries. And so after 24 years of serving, you should be able to do something about that. Senator Rubio came to Jacksonville and pointed out that Eureka Gardens, you know, he just couldn't believe those federal dollars, how that place really looked. That creates crime. And I create people not really wanting to get involved. Any of us can say that we delivered. I could say I delivered for the state of Florida when I wrote Preservation 2000, the most comprehensive land purchasing program in America. I could say I could deliver it when I rewrote the Everglades legislation. There's a lot of things you can say you deliver. I think the most important thing to say is Jacksonville is not going to lose any ground if Al Lawson goes to Congress. I know how to work across party lines. I've been able to do it for the last 20 years, and I know how to get along with members, and that's what you have to do in order to get along with members. There have been the last 16 years Republican governors when I was serving, and if you had to ask any of those governors today, they said they would tell you that I was able to work with them in order to get things done. I don't think there should be any fear about a person who says that they deliver it. You know, I don't know whether you deliver it to everyone, but that's your job. You know, that's what the taxpayers sent us up there to do. This seat does not belong to myself. It does not belong to Ms. Brown. That seat belongs to the people. And so I think that's what we have to do is convince the people that we are very capable of doing whatever it takes for a city. Jacksonville, in my opinion, is the gateway to Florida. And because of being a gateway to Florida, you really have to really focus in on the issues here because they're in competition with other states.
You mentioned the poverty and the lack of jobs, particularly on Jacksonville's north side. What would you do differently than Kareem Brown to address some of those really deep-seated problems here in this city?
Well, I think one of the things you do, first of all, you have to work with the government here. You have to work with the city government. You got new leadership and the mayor's office. You have to go in and work with them and make sure that you bring them up to Washington to work on programs in housing with the housing administration and see what can we do better. Now it has become a focus of your U.S. senator. And because it's become a focus of your U.S. senator, it makes it a lot more I think, convenience for you to have someone that understand the issue when they'll visit the area. Mm-hmm. So I think that one of the things that we can accomplish more than anything else is once we identify the problem, once you identify the problem, then we start to work on it.
And lots of calls as we speak now in studio. His first time on the program with former State Senator Al Lawson of Tallahassee challenging Corrine Brown for her District 5 seat in Congress. What are your questions? Let's go to the phones right now at 549-2937. Bill in St. John's. Hey, Bill. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Melissa, this is Phil. And good morning,
Senator. Phil. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you in North Florida. Listen, I just wanted to, from a comment standpoint, just say how excited that we are, those that have worked in the legislative process, you know, representing farmers and people in North Florida for the last 20 years. Senator Lawson, his integrity, his ability to work across party lines and get things accomplished is just phenomenal. He's a breath of fresh air. And certainly, when elected to Congress, he will, hit the ground running. So, Al, great to hear you this morning and glad you're in North Florida.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for that call and lots of calls for Al Lawson. What are your questions for him and your thoughts about the 2016 election cycle? Maybe we can talk about that, too. 549-2937. Ricky is in Jacksonville. Hi, Ricky.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Ricky, turn your radio down and go ahead. Okay, Ricky, I'm going to put you back on hold, but turn your radio down and we'll take you in a moment. 549-2937, Neil in Riverside. Hello, Neil. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. Mr. Lawson, Jacksonville is known as a logistics center, and I think it's well known here that Congresswoman Brown has delivered millions and millions of dollars for our port, for transportation, which, of course, creates many, many jobs. We have a new federal court, a somewhat new federal courthouse that she delivered on. If you were elected to Congress, taking into account the kind of activity this community has had in logistics and the kind of jobs that were created, what kind of priorities would you have in that field, specifically logistics, because that's where the Congresswoman, as I think, again, many appreciate, has been someone who's produced and delivered for the community.
All right. Thank you, Neil, I should say. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Al Lawson.
Thank you, Neil. That was a very good question. Neil, that's our responsibility as a leader, as an elected official, once you sent us, is to make sure that we deliver for the communities. I think when you mention about your port area, you know, I know that there's a big issue that is facing the ports about dredging because Jacksonville is in competition with Savannah, Georgia, as well as Charlotte. And, you know, it's going to take quite a bit of money in order to be able to do this project. In fact, it's going to probably take maybe $600 or $700 million. At the federal government, we can get probably half of those dollars, but the city is going to have to provide the rest of it. But I think the most important issue with that, we have to make sure, I met with the river keepers here, that the mitigation is also included. No one is opposed to it because it's bringing more jobs. And I understand, too, the military is the largest employer here, with maybe about 19,000 people. And so it becomes very important that you protect and make sure the military, you know, keep their function here and that there's no changes going on in Congress. That is what all of us value our careers on, is being able to bring home on the bacon. When I first went into the legislature in 1982, one of the things that happened, I was so concerned about what bill I was going to sponsor, bills, and I was seated next to former Commissioner Tom Gallagher. And Tom Gallagher was from Miami area. And I learned as a freshman coming in, it's not how many bills that you sponsored, but what resources you bring back to your community. And I learned that from a Republican who ended up becoming a very good friend. And throughout my career, that's what I was able to do. And if you go back and look at my record, I was able to bring in hundreds of millions of dollars throughout North Florida. When you talk about courthouse projects, they are very important in rural areas. When you talk about funding for university, for educational purposes, when you talk about just real general things such as transportation. Are you going to make sure your community survive on transportation projects that are so extremely important to the state of Florida? And those are the kind of thing, those are the kind of things that I pride myself on. There's no other reason to be in the legislature other than to see what you can do for your communities.
Let me ask you as a follow-up, when we talk about Kareem Brown's efforts on behalf of Jacksport, if you oust Brown, you'll be a newbie in Congress, a fresh face. You won't have the seniority in the ranking that she's built up over decades. What would you say to supporters of Kareem Brown who like that about her tenure?
Well, you know, I just have to compliment Ms. Brown for her service in America and to this particular area. But I know it's time for a change, you know, and I think that no other person can forward that change right now other than myself. I have the ability to work with a lot of members in Congress, and I don't think it's going to cause any problem. I can assure you that Jacksonville, Duval will be at the top of my list. I have a unique relationship with this area. When I was in college, I used to have to come down here because it was the only place I could get clothes to fit me, in a place called Lebo's.
Is that like a tall men's store or
tall
something?
Tall men's store, okay. Yeah. And then my brother lived here. My brother lived in this area, been for a number of years. He's chairman of the board at Florida A&M University. And, you know, he keep me abreast of a lot of things that are going on here. And we're going to have a wonderful staff. I look forward to opening the office here to really serve the people, you know, in this Jacksonville area. And I will always be coming back and forth because that's what you really need, service. You know, I remember when I first went in the office, I was in a real depressed area. And I told the guys down there in a place called Frenchtown in Tallahassee that this office belonged to them. So after I got elected, they stayed in my office. My staff said, you got to ask some of your friends to leave so we can get something done, because they came up every day.
Let me ask you, too. You know, if you are elected, you'd be going back and forth a lot between Jacksonville and Tallahassee. Kareem Brown fought as hard as she could to prevent this district from being redrawn in that configuration, saying it's not a natural configuration. We're talking about two very different cities, different constituencies. Your power base is in Tallahassee. How would you navigate that? Because critics have said that the redrawing of it is awkward, basically.
Well, you got to understand that I was serving in the House when the district was drawn from Jacksonville down to Orlando. And that was a deal that was cut. They used to call it the R&B plan. And the plan was cut so they could help get other African-Americans elected to the state of Florida. So the district was really not appropriate. And so anytime a district just leave Jacksonville and go down 95 and go into the African-American community, you know, that was a district that was going to make draw a congressional district going to be around 65% African-American. I've never served in that kind of district. My district in North Florida has only been about 26% African-American. And so, you know, I have a broader base. You know, I want people to feel comfortable that they have someone that they can really work with. So the district, that's the way it was drawn. It was only drawn that way because it was gerrymandering. You know, now with fair districts, you know, they went through the state of Florida. They did the best they could. And it's been challenged at the Florida Supreme Court. It's been challenged in federal court. There have been a lot of money spent by Ms. Brown, you know, did not want to serve in this district. She did not want to come up to North Florida. Jacksonville is not North Florida. It's not Central Florida. Even though it's an extremely large city, you know, with ports and the military base here. But I represented the coastal area military bases in Panama City, you know, on the Gulf Coast, you know, and the Panama City military base there with the Air Force and so forth, and over in those communities where the military was extremely important. And I represented all of the coastal area in Apalachicola, you know, and those areas, Wakulla County. So I know the issues that my water, and I chaired all of the water committees throughout the state of Florida for the legislature. So, you know, it's good that people have that question and that concern, but Jacksonville and North Florida, and I look forward to representing North Florida.
Let's go to your calls for former State Senator Al Lawson, 549-2937, Ricky in Jacksonville. Hi, Ricky. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, I got a question for Mr. Lawson. Yes, sir, you have a very dismal
record for protecting our environments, particularly here in Jacksonville, and also a very dismal record on civil rights. How do you expect people to support you with that type of record, sir? Thank you.
Well, I'm very proud of my record in the state of Florida, you know, and I've been very good with environmental issues throughout my career. That's the reason why I've been tabbed by both Republican and Democrat administration and the governor's office on these issues that affect the state of Florida. And civil rights, you know, is very important. You want people to have the same rights regardless, you know, of where they come from or what they are involved in. It's very important that we protect people's civil rights. That's what America is all about. And that's one of the things that you can count on, that I will keep that leadership.
Here's a follow-up question for you in the similar vein on Twitter. What has Senator Lawson delivered for the black community in Tallahassee?
I have delivered for the community in general. You know, I have provided over $500 million in support for Florida A&M University. I have been able to build the Family Life Center at Bethel Church so they can reach out into the depressed community in and around Tallahassee. In Tallahassee, you know, as a Gaston County is real close by. But for water projects such as protecting waterways, providing projects in there that support construction for the community, I think one of the things I tell people, you know, on a question like that, all you have to do is just ask the people in Tallahassee. I don't want to brag too much, but I've taken care of their needs.
And we'll go back to your calls for former State Senator Al Lawson in a moment. The number to join us, 549-2937. Now, you mentioned that when it comes to District 5, it's time for a change. As many political observers here in North Florida know, Kareem Brown is under indictment. Do you think she's guilty?
Well, you know, that's court of law is going to have to decide that. You know, it's a lot of allegations and so forth that are going on. You know, I'm not as familiar with a particular case. All I know is what I read about on the case. I wish her well in court. But I think that as a politician, you know, we live in a fishbowl. And because of that, there's a certain image that you have to keep, you know, and it's a different standard than the average person. And when you take on the responsibility of being a leader, to being a politician, you have to live above the fray. And so that's what happened. You see, it happens all across America. It ain't just Jacksonville. It's all over. And I think once you reach that point and things start happening, you have to determine which way you're going, you know. And I've always wanted to be a role model for any kid in the community, and that's the life in politics that I've lived.
Jim in Jacksonville. Hey, Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hey, good morning.
Yes, Mr. Lawson. Would you please give some concrete example of legislature that you have sponsored and have enacted in the law?
Okay, Jim, I'll probably be talking most of the day because, you know, there have been times when I've sponsored it over governmental operation and chairing the General Audit Committee maybe in 1 year is doing 80 or 90 pieces of legislation because of your responsibility as a chairman. But I'll tell you some legislation that I'm real proud of. I'm real proud of Preservation 2000. You know, Preservation 2000 was landmark legislation, you know, and it is to protect Florida underground aquifers because 95% of our drinking water come from our underground aquifers. So that affects everyone in the state of Florida. I'm real proud of redoing the Everglades legislation to create a relationship with the federal government for their funding for us to protect the Everglades, to clean it up so it provides resources to South Florida for their water supply. I'm real proud of which legislation that gained international attention was Rosewood. Rosewood, you remember, it occurred in 1923 when African Americans were driven from their land, you know, and we provided...
And massacred.
And what happened in the state of Florida, it was a really tough bill, you know. The state of Florida went back and apologized, and it brought those survivors to Tallahassee and to make sure that we provided resources for them and create a scholarship for the descendants of their kids to go to college. Another important, you know, we have pretty much destroyed Biscayne Bay and Tampa Bay. And so the Apalachicola Bay was one that we really need to protect. And so I passed the Apalachicola Bay Protection Act. I passed legislation also to provide for first-generation students to attend college, you know, which is very, very significant because we want people to get a college education. And I could go on and on and on legislation that I passed, but those were very significant.
Here's a tweet for you that's somewhat related to some of the discussions we've been having. Senator Lawson, this is from Selena. What do you think can be done to ease tensions between police and the African-American community?
That's a very big question. There's always been tension between the police and the African-American community, but it's heightened at this particular point. I have received endorsement from the FOP, and I received endorsement from the PBA. You know, I worked with the police forces for a number of years. You know, I told someone the other day, you know, you want to ease the tension because it's very important that we have the protection from the police. And I tell people when something go wrong, who are you going to call, Ghostbusters? No, you're not going to call Ghostbusters. You're going to call the man in blue. And so if you're going to call the man in blue, there are going to always be people, in no matter where you work, that you're going to have problems with. I think with the heightened situation that we have now, you're going to see different diversity training. You're going to see people working with each other. And we need more respect for the police. And I think in some cases, in the African-American community, we need to talk to our churches and so forth to let them understand and talk to their constituent, because they reach a lot of people on a Sunday morning and a Sunday afternoon, about the respect we should have for the police. And I think the police itself, you know, has got to make sure that they get the kind of training that they really want, because we want to be safe. You know, we want them to protect us. I've had two home invasions. You know, you have home invasion, who are you going to call?
In your own home.
In my own home. You're going to call the police. You know, they broke into my house, tied my wife up.
Oh,
you
my
know,
gosh.
Ram checked.
When was that?
That was a couple of years ago. You know, I can't remember. And so, you know, I felt really confident when the police was there, you know, to what happened with her. And so it is a very serious question, and you're going to see some changes. And I think that you have to have people who are going to work in the community. You're going to see more police patrolling the streets. You're going to find more working in neighborhoods, you know, and I think you're going to bring about a change. So this, it's a joint relationship that you must have, and you need leaders that make sure that we have a big crime rate in our communities. There's no question about it. And so because of those crime in those communities, we got to clean up these communities. You know, we just can't blame it on the police coming in all the time. It's criminal activity out there that we need to clean up to help make our communities safe.
You know, it's been really interesting to watch first the Republican convention in Cleveland and then this week the Democratic convention in Philadelphia. On the Republican convention stage, there was a lot of talk about Blue Lives Matter. And as the Democrats took the spotlight in Philly, we saw mothers of the movement take the stage, women whose sons had been killed often after an interaction with a police officer, not all of them. But we saw the mother of Trayvon Martin and the mother of Jordan Davis from here in Jacksonville, Lucy McBath, talk about their movement and talk about Black Lives Matter. It sounds as though you're a candidate who's trying to bridge that partisan divide somewhat when we talk about these two narratives that we are seeing play out between the two parties this season.
You're absolutely correct, and that's one thing that you have to do. And I can understand the mothers who have lost their kids. It's very significant, you know, and the movement that has started around America, I think it's great. I think it helps because it brings the attention to everyone. And I really feel that Black Lives Matter. I feel like every life matters. No mother, regardless of their race, want to lose their kids in a situation that has occurred. And this is where it started. You know, it's good to be around a lot of young people, like I'm around a lot of young people in Tallahassee and so forth, university students, and they march on the Capitol all the time on issues that are important. And these kids are coming together because they're Black students, white students, Asian students, any student that you can think of, they're coming because they want to make a positive impact on our communities. And I think that the transition that is taking place right now in Florida and throughout America is you're going to see a big change. And, you know, sometimes things happen like this for a reason. And when they happen, it bring about a tremendous change. And I think that people are going to get involved. When they get involved, you're going to see things happen. There have been community meetings, I know, in Tallahassee with the police, the sheriff, you know, about the issues that exist. And people are beginning to talk out and tell how they feel, tell people how they feel. And I think this is a good opportunity to let people know that from my standpoint, I'm working with all the people that I can to make sure that we alleviate a lot of the problem that we have between this racial tension.
And, of course, in November, Florida voters will decide the fate once again of Amendment 2. That is the medical marijuana legalization amendment. Here's an email for you from Max listening in. He says, would Lawson support the legalization of marijuana?
Well, thank you, Max. Max, from a medical standpoint, you know, it has been proven throughout the country that medical marijuana really helps people with pain. People are suffering in this country. And I think the country is beginning to realize all over that there is some significance in something as the use of medical marijuana to help people with the illness. So I would support it. You know, I think it's extremely important.
You're in favor of Amendment 2?
I'm in favor of Amendment 2.
Yeah. Are you in favor of the legalization of this drug, cannabis, for recreational purposes, as some states have done?
No, I'm not.
You're not.
Yeah.
And so you are going to be making a couple of appearances in Jacksonville today. Where are you going to be?
Well, I'm going to visit some of the senior citizen centers, you know, because seniors are very important to me, you know, to see how they feel, to talk to their leaders, to see in some of the nursing homes and so forth, you know, what kind of resources they need to continue in Washington in order for them to maintain, because, you know, we're just a few steps away. And I can remember when my mother was in one of these senior centers, it was the most important part of us making sure our health needs were taken care of. When people have given so much on the front end of their careers, on the back end of the career, we need to make sure that we take care of people, you know. And so that's one of the reasons why I always love to go to the senior centers to see what resources can be provided.
You're going to the Mary L. The Singletary Center?
Singletary Center.
And that's you're going there first, right?
Yes.
And then you'll be at, what's the other one? Lane Wiley Senior Center.
Right.
Later today.
Yeah.
After lunch, I guess, right? Okay. Well, State Senator Al Lawson, we so appreciate you giving us some time on the show this morning, and we'll continue to follow the campaign. Thanks for being with us.
It's a real privilege to be here, and I would like to say I love you, Jacksonville.
Thanks for being here. Yeah. He's State Senator Al Lawson challenging Kareem Brown for the District 5 congressional seat, one of two challengers in that race. Much more still ahead later, The Spectator with some ideas for your weekend. But up next, how to liberate yourself from dieting. A conversation with local author and wellness coach Cindy Landham. Back in a moment.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
As Florida school districts prepare students for success in a global knowledge-based economy, how does arts education factor into the plan? Join WJCT for Community Thread, The Politics of Arts Education, as we explore this issue and how advocates are working to ensure that diverse perspectives are represented in the development of new arts policies. Log on to wjct.org/communitythread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be a part of our studio audience on August 4th.
This program is underwritten by the Ann McDonald Baker Family Foundation.
A 6-year-old Afghan girl was caught in the crossfire between U.S. and Afghan soldiers and Taliban fighters.
I remember her quite vividly there on that stretcher and how tiny she looked.
Air Force Surgeon Chance Henderson led the medical team that worked for months to save her shattered leg. Now she's about to go home.
She's very near and dear to all of our hearts. It's going to be a tough day.
The story later on All Things Considered from NPR News. Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are pleased to announce that Pedro Noguera, national expert on public education in America, is this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach, Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. For more information, visit wjct.org/teach.
On the next Fresh Air, soul singer Sharon Jones talks about returning to the stage after treatment for pancreatic cancer. She's the subject of a new documentary by Academy Award-winning filmmaker Barbara Koppel. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's a simple piece of advice for anyone who's struggled with their weight, and that's so many of us. Here it is. We are all born with an innate wisdom about how to eat right. But dieting leads us to disconnect from our intuition about food, and it leads to food obsession, hatred of our bodies, anxiety, and weight fluctuation. That's the message one local wellness coach and author delivers in her new book, and she's learned these lessons the hard way. Here with more, we welcome Cindy Landham, certified wellness coach and author of The Liberated Eater. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Melissa.
So you want to liberate us from dieting. That sounds good.
Yes, absolutely. And I dieted for 30 years, and it never worked.
You've tried them all.
Tried them
all. The grapefruit diet, the high-protein diet,
the paleo diet,
the list goes on. And,
exactly.
You know, and fads come and go in dieting, too.
Yes, they do.
So you rode those waves.
Rode them and about drowned in them.
Why is that?
Because diets simply can't work. They don't teach us how to live with food. They literally disconnect us from the inner wisdom we're all born with. So we end up actually, not only do they not work, but they actually do harm.
Why do you say that?
Well, because as we disconnect from our wisdom and start to chase other solutions, we get farther and farther from our ability to hear our own hunger, our own satisfaction, and we literally become disordered eaters. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot to overcome. And the longer we diet, the farther we get from really loving ourselves, knowing ourselves, and being able to connect with the wisdom we have.
What was the breakthrough for you to sort of change your mindset about all this?
I stumbled into what I'll call recovery accidentally. I had dieted for 30 years. I was sitting at my desk.
Were you overweight?
Well, here's my yes.
Okay.
But that really wasn't the torture. In the beginning, it was. I went to college weighing 124 pounds after dieting myself down to, you know, small. And within one quarter, weighed 165.
Mm.
Now, and maybe more.
Freshman 25.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. 40. Yes. And that was because I had left home, gotten out from under the thumb of the food police, and my eating was just out of control. And that pattern continued for 30 years.
For 30 years. And then you said, so you were sitting at your desk.
Yes, in my mid-40s, making yet another weight chart, no telling how many I had hung in the bathroom. And it was as though it was an epiphany. I had failed. I simply could not do this. Now, I didn't know there was another answer, so I felt that I had failed at dieting. I would give up, and I would just gain weight till I died, and that would be sad, but that was going to be my fate. I could not diet anymore. And the odd thing was that over the next few years, just giving up that thought of good food, bad food, fattening food, non-fattening food, it opened up space in my life to begin to actually be sane around food. It's the rule following of dieting that sends us into binging. Eating too little always eventually leads to eating too much, and it makes us a little crazy in the process.
Yeah, because you feel so denied things you love.
Yes.
Well, the trick, I think, for so many of us, and I know I struggle with this too, is moderation, not being too strict with ourselves, but not going overboard. How do you get to that? That's always been my struggle, because I'm either on the wagon or I'm off the wagon.
Yes.
But I need to find a happy medium, and I think that's what you're saying works.
Exactly. And to leave the idea of the wagon, because think what happens when we fall off. We say we've blown it, and then what do? We absolutely binge until we start the next diet. So this roller coaster, and there's plenty of data to back this up, most of us chronic dieters actually gain weight over the long haul instead of lose it. So the answer is for us to completely leave that paradigm of being on some kind of program, on the wagon or off the wagon, and instead become mindful, intuitive, informed eaters. So we're taking food off the big hairy deal list, and it's becoming a good gift.
How do you live that every day? How do you do it?
Well, a lifestyle change takes time. It's not like getting on a diet and getting off. It takes support. It takes establishing new skills, just like riding a bicycle. The more you practice, the better you get. But over time, we lose that crazy feeling about food, and we begin to relax and to be able to eat reasonably. And it is a wonderful discovery. I work with people all the time who are very concerned with losing weight, and as they get to a more comfortable weight, the thing they say that is even more important to them is that they finally feel at peace in their mind.
Here's a tweet for you from Josh. What is the scientific basis you follow for abandoning diet rules?
Well, you know, the diet industry likes to keep this quiet, but there is just a mountain of research out there. You can read Triboli and Resch, who wrote Intuitive Eating back in the mid-90s. Michelle May, a physician from Phoenix, Dr. Ludwig from Boston University. I mean, it's endless. And not only biologically, but psychologically, that diets set us up for disordered eating.
And it's really psychological is what you're getting at, not the physiological changes that go on in the body.
Well,
you're really getting into the mind piece of this, it sounds like.
Yes, certainly the body is a part of this, but until we have a peaceful place between our ears, until we normalize our relationship with food, we're going to continue to act crazy with it. Mm-hmm. Undereat it, overeat it. It becomes our best friend and our biggest enemy at the same time, and that's a tough place to live.
Now, in your book, The Liberated Eater, you give the reader tools for what you call food encounters.
Yes.
Since we encounter food everywhere we go. So you have some tips and tools for people.
Exactly. So when we're dieting, we're following rules. And what do we do with rules? We break them. And the minute we break them, then we're binging. So we're going to leave those rules and begin to adopt wonderful tools. I think about every morning we talk about getting up and putting on our tool belt. And one example would be best bites first. Most of us chronic dieters save the best bite to last, which ensures, of course, that we're going to eat through everything, not listening to our satisfaction cue to get to the reward of that best bite. But just that one tool to sit down, look at your food, say to yourself, wow, what looks really best to me? And go for that best few bites first. It's so much easier to leave unwanted food behind when you've already had the best.
Hmm. That's a good tip. And there are more in Cindy's book. It's called The Liberated Eater. She's wellness coach, workshop leader, author, and speaker Cindy Landham. New to the area, by the way. And thanks for being here.
Oh, my privilege.
We'll be right back.
Parents, kids, WJCT's Back to School Bash is coming up. Due to popular demand, we've added an additional screening at 10 a.m. on August 6th at the WJCT studios. Watch the new Odd Squad movie on the big screen. Enjoy snacks, participate in fun activities, and have the chance to win great prizes. The event is free, but we ask that you bring a book to donate to the Police Athletic League. Log on to WJCT.org/events to reserve your space today.
Forget Michael Douglas in Wall Street or Leo in that other one, and think about this.
There was so much in that script that I could identify with, and I could identify with the character of Naomi. I was interested right at the get-go.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Women in movies about Wall Street, where they're the hero, or the villain, maybe, I don't know. It's next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
This week on Invisibilia, we explore the stories of people who faked it till they became it.
I said, well, what if we just created like a fake celebrity entourage and let's just see how many people actually will think I'm famous.
Guys, what was it like meeting Brett?
I love him!
But can change happen from the outside in? That's on the next Invisibilia from NPR.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, we are sending a call out right now to everyone who loves Instagram. If you love public radio and you love your pets, be part of our I Love WJCT contest. Tomorrow, we're going to publish our favorite Instagram photo of the week with the hashtag. Make sure to use the hashtag I Love WJCT. Now, this week's theme is in honor of your furry friends. You know, The Secret Life of Pets is the number one movie at the box office right now. Do you love your cat, your dog, your pot-bellied pig, your bird, whatever your pet is? Take a picture of your pet, post it on Instagram, and use the hashtag I Love WJCT. We'll pick the favorite Insta of the week and put it in our first read newsletter. That's our e-blast that goes out to WJCT listeners every morning. You can subscribe to it at WJCTnews.org and look for the winner of our Instagram contest this Friday. Finally, this hour, lots to do all around the First Coast this weekend. From Jaguars training camp to Nene Leakes.
Yes,
here,
I know.
Here is she to tell us all about it is TheSpectator.com's Carrie Speckman.
Yay!
Here today.
When did I stop becoming the maven of mirth?
Oh, excuse me. The mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth.
Thank you.
TheSpectator.com's Carrie Speckman.
I didn't notice. Have you dropped that? Or
no, I just forgot.
Oh, I thought maybe I just missed that you
No, that is completely my... Because, of course, you are the maven of all things mirthful in this city.
Sometimes.
The undisputed queen of mirth.
Whoa, can I put that on my resume?
Aretha Franklin is the queen of soul. You're the queen of mirth.
The queen. Oh, well, Folio cover girl Melissa Ross said it, so it must be true. All right, then.
All right.
Congrats on your cover. I need to read the story.
That was really exciting. Okay, let's talk about events.
Let's talk about it.
Jaguars training camp starts today.
Tomorrow.
Okay. Pardon me. Tomorrow.
And it's 10 to 12. Wait, maybe it is today. 12:20, and it's like off and on Friday to Sunday, then Tuesday to Thursday. If you go to Jaguars.com, register, and there's all kinds of stuff you can bring and not bring, and
sure.
So go to Jaguars.com.
Yeah, Jaguars.com. But people really come out for that.
Yes, they
do. They love it.
It doesn't matter that it's 10,000 degrees out.
I know, that always amazes me.
I know. They
people will sit in the heat and watch them practice. It's so cool.
Admission and parking are free. However, they have a lot of construction going on, so you may be wise to leave a little early.
Okay. Now, also Friday at the Florida Theater, the stars of the Lifetime hit show Bring It.
It has already been brought in.
Okay. I don't know about this show. I feel bad. I'm not familiar with this
I've never
one.
Seen it.
Okay.
But it's the Miss D is the, I guess, choreographer, teacher, and she's got the Dancing Dolls.
Oh, very
which is
nice.
Her dance troupe.
I watch Dance Moms, so
okay.
I need to get familiar with
kind of, sort of,
kinda
similar,
like it.
But
sure.
I don't think that she's crazy like the Dance Moms.
Like
lady.
Abby Lee Miller, yeah.
Oh, wow. That was the you coach. Know her whole name.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they will, fans get to take part because there's live audience voting. They can ask the dolls questions.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I do know about Nene Leakes. Nene Leakes from Real Housewives of Atlanta is
Who knew?
She's coming to the Comedy Zone this weekend.
I know.
Wow. How about that?
I think my voice just changed in that.
you're so excited.
Sentence. Well, I didn't watch RHOA. I only watched Beverly Hills.
All right.
But yeah, she was on Celebrity Apprentice. She was on Broadway. She's done all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So go to comedyzone.com for tickets. Oh, speaking of tickets, I need to do this very quickly.
Yes.
John Citroni of Folio Weekly.
Yes, on my list.
Yeah. John Citroni is having a concert Saturday
night. You
mean
Mud on the Canvas 3?
Mm-hmm. This is at 1904 Music Hall. I have two tickets to this concert.
Two.
In my hands.
I see them.
Featuring It's Dove Tonsil, Ruffians, Meredith Woodard, Chris Buck, and Scott Broad. Two free tickets to this concert Saturday night, 7:30, 1904 Music Hall.
There's music, there's comedy, there's hypnotism.
Yeah, this is going to be a great show. Now, email us now.
Now.
With your request for these two free tickets.
Right now.
Right now. At firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, get your two free tickets. We will pick one winner at random after the show.
And then go to Instagram and post a picture of your pet.
Of your pet,
and don't
of
forget to tag WJCT.
And tag WJCT.
Don't think I won't do that.
We're almost out of time. Sharks and Sons play this weekend and Sunday at the Florida Theater. They are showing, oh my gosh, it's the 30th anniversary.
How? Every time I see
just
that,
kill
like,
me. It's the 30th anniversary of Pretty in Pink.
I saw it in the theater.
Oh, so did I.
Oh my gosh.
I saw the Psychedelic Furs in concert
when
coming I was in
back,
college.
By the way.
Yeah.
October.
Pretty in Pink is 30 years old.
Isn't she?
go see the movie on the big screen at the Florida Theater.
That was my Psychedelic Furs impression.
Oh, she should have gone with Ducky. I'm sorry.
No.
Yes, he was better for her.
He was nicer.
Blaine was a kind of a tool. I mean, let's just be honest.
I don't think he was.
Okay. We're just going to have to agree to disagree.
He's Scott Baio, but that's my first point.
Go to thespectator.com for a list of all weekend events, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, you will.
All right. Next on Diane Rehm, updates from day three of the Democratic Convention. President Obama and Vice President Biden making their case for Hillary Clinton. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for a Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.